Bobby Shaw is back with us to share more great information about some real estate education is how I kind of have named these segments, Bobby. And welcome to the show and thanks for coming back.
Hi, Lindsay.
I say education because, Bobby, I don't know another way to say this. Real estate doesn't have to be hard, but there are things you need to know, even if you think you're just doing something very simple. It's still a lot of stuff.
Lindsay, no doubt. I mean, you know, the title work. I mean, there's just a little bit of complication in the process sometimes.
Right. And the savvier things. You are, knowledge is power. I think that is true for everything. This is another one of those aspects that if you want to make sure you're doing what's best for you and your family, then you have to take the initiative to make sure that you're educated, that you're knowledgeable about what you're doing, even though they're going to find realtors and real estate brokers who are going to help them. That's the whole purpose of why there are professionals in this town to help us. But you still have to know what's going on so that you can work with them as a partner.
Yeah, no, that's right. And there are people out there that can help, and you do need to get the help. And you and I were talking the other day about land and about uses of land. And yep. One of the things that always comes to mind and what I was thinking about for this segment was that to talk to people about that it's important when you buy a piece of property, and it doesn't matter if it's a house or a vacant piece of land or whatever, what you can use it for, because people think that they can buy a piece of land and do anything with it.
Right.
And there are restrictions out there on property of all types.
And when you say that, I think that's important because some people say, oh, well, that's only if I'm buying a piece of vacant land. But you just clearly said, no, this is really any land. It's any housing, any structure, because you don't know what the person who originally divided that or built that or created that development had in mind and what they wanted. And really, that's kind of how this all starts, isn't it?
No, that's exactly right. A lot of times it starts with the fact that I'm able to, as a developer, put restrictive covenants on a piece of property that you can use it for stick-built houses only, or you can use it for commercial, or you can use it to put a manufactured home on.
Okay.
And even on top of that, there's a such thing as zoning in some areas. We don't have zoning here in Hobbs, but Lovington does have zoning.
I was going to say, is there anywhere in Lee County that they do?
In fact, Lovington, Eunice has zoning.
Okay.
So not only do you have to deal with the restrictive covenants or deed restrictions that a particular landowner and developers put on, but you have to be aware of, does the governing entity have restrictions on what that land can be used for, or what that property or that structure can be used for?
And a lot of people are sitting here thinking, well, how would I know? How would I find out or figure it out? And that's where there's a couple of things that you need to, you don't have to know the answer. You have to know the right person or resources to go to get the answers.
Right.
Okay.
Well, and with zoning, you go to the municipality or the governing entity,
okay,
and you get a zoning map that shows whether that property can be used for multifamily, it could be used for single family,
okay,
whether it could be used for commercial or industrial. And that's different. People think of commercial use, but I can do a retail store or a supply store in a commercial building, but if I've got toxic chemicals, I can't put toxic chemicals in there.
That's where it becomes industrial.
Industrial.
Okay.
So there's areas that's restricted against that.
And some very specifically will allow not one and not the other. Some will open it up to either. But
right,
you have to be aware, because if it's in, and again, this zoning thing, does just because there's zoning and there are restrictions or specific applications allowed by the municipality, that doesn't mean that there are not still more restrictions that were put on it by the developer.
By a previous landowner.
Okay,
or
yes,
a previous landowner, maybe
okay,
not the developer.
Okay.
If I own a piece of property and you owned it previously to me, and you said that, hey, you can have horses, you can have a single-family residence, or you can have a manufactured home, and I buy that from you,
mm-hmm,
and I'm going to cut it up again,
okay,
I could put another layer of restrictions on there, so your restrictions apply. Then if I say, no, I don't want horses anymore,
okay,
I can restrict the land further from not having horses or animals.
Interesting.
I can restrict it from having a manufactured home.
Okay.
So each person person that owns a piece of property can put their restrictions on it to protect their property next door if they so choose.
Which also is important to note, then, that you can't just go off of what everybody else in that neighborhood's looking like, because it may not have any bearing whatsoever.
Oh, no.
Okay.
In fact, there are properties that will allow a manufactured home, and the property next door is restricted against
it. Okay.
So, very much so. So, when you're buying a piece of vacant land, especially, you need to find out what it can be used for. And one of the problems we've had over the last few years is people using property in restricted areas to park commercial equipment,
right,
like water haulers and dump trucks and backhoes, and using it for commercial use. Well, there may be restrictive covenants just because you go buy a 10-acre tract of land out here to build a house on or build you a shop on doesn't necessarily mean that you can use that to park your water haulers on.
And this is happening, and it happened especially back a few years ago when things were extremely busy. Businesses were popping up literally almost every day. They needed a place to locate their business and all that equipment. It still is happening, though. You still see it. And sometimes you'll see where it seems like it's right in the middle of the neighborhood. They may or may not be in compliance. As a homeowner next door, I may or may not have any say in that.
No, that's exactly right. And even if it's a non-restricted piece of land,
okay,
a neighbor could file a complaint against you for an offensive operation,
okay,
for environmental issues, for whatever. So you really have to be careful when you're buying property to use for commercial use.
Mm-hmm.
But not only that, even in a neighborhood of established houses, and let's use an example, that Broadmoor subdivision across the street from the Broadmoor Mall.
Okay.
You know, there's restrictive covenants in there.
Okay.
Some of those restrictive covenants have been broken because somebody has used one of those houses for a business, and nobody has ever complained about it or stopped them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's a big debate on whether, because of that, are all of those restrictions broken, or is it just that one restriction, or are they still able to enforce some of the restrictions? So that's real debatable, and it has to, if you go out there and do something, you better be aware that if your neighbors decide to get together and hire an attorney or take legal action against you, that they could very well stop you from doing what you think you should be able to do with it.
And Bobby, this happens, unfortunately or fortunately, depending on which side of that discussion you're on, all the time. I mean, people are unfortunately not heeding your advice, not getting educated first, and going out and making decisions without doing their due diligence, as you said, and then potentially getting themselves in a predicament. And this is one, how things kind of evolve and change, but it also creates some unnecessary challenges versus if you just figured it out on first, what is it that I want it for? Where is the best location for that? And then finding something that fits so that you don't have to really deal with all that after the fact, right?
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you, finding out what all of the restrictions are on a piece of property sometimes is not easy.
Okay.
Now, if it's in an established subdivision, mm-hmm, inside of Hobbs, New Mexico, that has some restrictive covenants in place and recorded, that's probably the easy way.
Okay.
But if you've got a piece of land out here north of town that maybe was an unrestricted piece, or appears there's no restrictive covenants,
okay,
that have been placed and recorded on it, that does not mean that there's not some deed restrictions on that thing from somewhere in the past. And those aren't readily available until they do a title search.
Okay.
And even when they do a title search, if they don't search this thing all the way back, because there's a little flaw in the system that a lot of times those deed restrictions will get omitted on a deed that has been passed through over the years.
I see.
So the one that's recorded today may not have any deed restrictions in it, but three deeds back, there could very well be some deed restrictions on that, and they still apply.
Until you change them. Until you reverse them.
No, you can't.
You can't reverse them.
They stay on there. They just never got on the document.
Literally just didn't get transferred.
They didn't get transferred on the document.
Okay.
So it's really a scary thing, because I have people ask me all the time, hey, can I have horses and cattle out there on that piece of property? Or can I have pigs, or can I have chickens? Well, it's not that easy sometimes to answer that yes or no. You know, we say, hey, look, it appears that there's no restrictive covenants on there, or that there's no deed restrictions, but we will not know for sure and 100% until we get that title search done.
And oftentimes, Bobby, the title search really is in the process after the fact that you've already chosen it, you've made an offer on it, it's been accepted, and then that's when that search comes
very
about.
Much so, and that's why I say there's a little flaw here in the system.
Right.
And most of us that have been in the real estate business around here do have a feel for whether we've areas that you can do certain things in.
So experience has led you.
Yes, and that again is why you, when you're getting ready to buy something, whether it be a commercial building or a house or whatever, that you do, you know, enlist somebody that has some expertise in the area.
And just tell me that, let's kind of outline that, because what is the responsibility? I know that a real estate broker has, they are there to be a resource. They're there to help guide in these particular types of things, as well as in so many other aspects of a purchase or a transfer of property. However, you can't assume that that broker is going to be able to answer all those questions, or that it's that is their job to do so.
No.
They can help guide you to the right place, but you really ultimately are responsible for finding that out as the individual who's going to purchase the property.
Very much so.
And I think that's important, because I think a lot of people think, oh, well, my realtor is going to find that out and tell me. Well, if the realtor, for whatever reason, did not get all that information, it would not necessarily be liable on them that they didn't. It's liable on you, or your responsibility is probably the better word.
And as a real estate broker, there's no way I would make that determination of whether you could use a piece of land for anything. You know, we have to do the due diligence, and you have to make that decision yourself, even if you need to get some legal advice.
Okay. Which oftentimes may be the best route, because again, you're the one that's going to be stuck with whatever you've got and the challenges or the specifics of how it is used afterwards.
Yeah. Lindsay, I can tell you, over the 34 years that I've been a real estate broker here, I can tell you some real interesting nightmares and scenarios where that people did, and they weren't doing something that was real offensive to the neighborhood, but an area out north of town that was restricted against manufactured homes, their property was big enough that they said, hey, look, mom is getting older. We want to pick up a nice double wide or a nice manufactured home. We want to put it at the back of our property, let mom live there. Well, they set the foundation. They ordered the home. They had the home set up. Well, the restrictive covenants didn't allow that.
Right.
So the neighbors got together and said, hey, look, you need to cease and desist. Here's where the restrictive covenants, and you've got so much time to move that, or we're going to take legal action against you. And they had no choice, after spending all of that money, had no choice but to remove that home.
And for some people, I'm sure they're thinking, well, it's my property. Why can't I do what I want? I know that I've heard that multiple times in these situations. This is how the process works. It is how real estate works. It's how the legal system works. So as long as you are knowledgeable up front and do what you're supposed to figure it out ahead of time, then you can avoid a lot of these issues.
Oh, yeah, because those people in that neighborhood bought those houses because there was no manufactured home.
Right.
and so they...
And those people may have never even thought that they were going to have a want or desire to put a manufactured home on that land until this situation arose in their world, right?
That's very much so.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
So there was nothing malicious going on. There was nobody trying to do anything that they thought was wrong.
Right.
And it was a nice home. It was going to be attractive.
Oh,
I mean, it wasn't something
absolutely.
That was like moving a 50-year-old single-wide mobile home out there.
No eyesores.
But it is one of those things that happened, and we've seen that type of stuff happen. So you got to know where you're buying and what you're doing.
And one of the other things that I think you brought up, the water haulers and those types of businesses that have popped up and have these kinds of issues, RV parks. You know, a few years ago, there was some discussion about RV park in the city. It doesn't really matter if it's in the city or if it's out of the city. You still have to be careful with that, because this is a unique beast, RV parks. Not only are they commercial businesses, but then they are also it's multiple inhabitants.
Transients,
right? So there is a lot that goes with that. So even though that seems to be, and as the oil prices go back up, I foresee that that'll potentially become something that pops up again more and more. Those you have to be really careful about.
That's exactly right, because we did have one here a few years ago in the center of town that wanted to put an RV park in. They have to notify the the neighborhood of what's going on a particular piece of property. Whenever they ask for some variances or things like that, there's certain things you've got to have permits from the city to do. An RV park is one of them. Okay. You have to have a special use permit or a special permit to do certain things. Well, when they apply for that, then it triggers other things that they have to notify the neighbors. Well, on this particular case, the neighbors came out in force and said, hey, look, and the property was under contract. They hadn't purchased it yet, but it was under contract, and stopped them from putting the RV park. So therefore, the land didn't sell, and
a series of events then.